Do you think President Trump will be an asset or a liability in the upcoming election?
Not necessarily.
Yep.
I would say that that depends dramatically on how much support he gets to implement his agenda. President Trump has an outstanding agenda. It's based on three pillars: expand our economy, defend our nation, and preserve our culture. And if he has support in implementing that agenda, then he will be a tremendous asset here in Montana. If we're going to expand our economy, we need to reduce our regulations, we need to reform our health care, and we still have a lot of work to do on our tax reform. I mean, we absolutely do. Right now, the tax reform went through. We received a reduction in our taxation for the vast majority of the people of Montana. The median income here in the state is about $48,000. So the vast majority of the people of Montana received bigger paychecks when the tax reform bills went through. But there are still far too many tax brackets. We need to flatten this system out so that we don't have so many special interests that are up there lobbying in Washington, D.C. I believe that if he has support in getting that agenda through, that he will be a tremendous asset, because President Trump wants to see our country thrive and grow. You know, I do as well. I develop property, said so. And when you develop property, it takes a long time to get from bare ground to where people are actually living in the community. And I developed a community and took my mom out there, and she said, "You know something, Matthew?" She hadn't seen it at all. She said, "It must be really nice after all that time it took you to get that community opened to see it come out of the ground." And I said, "No, Mom, it's nice that everybody else can see it now. I saw it the first time I stepped foot on it. And I have a vision for this state and for this nation. It's where jobs are plentiful and people are free to pursue their full potential without the obstruction of an intrusive government. And that's what I'm going to help Donald Trump do."
You know, Donald Trump is a president like we've never seen. He was a candidate like we've never seen. You know, he's not a career politician. He's a businessman. He's had success in the private sector. He knows how to solve problems in the private sector. He was not part of the establishment. He's not a political insider. And I think that resonated with a lot of people. And look at what's happening and what he is doing for this nation. I really believe that Donald Trump loves this nation. And some of the things that I like seeing is the fact that he is making it easier for businesses to succeed. If businesses succeed, we have jobs, we have money in the economy, it floats all boats. If that continues, and he continues to slash the regulatory environment, the tax environment, and starts to do that, we're going to start to see continued economic prosperity. And I think that is of tremendous value to all Americans. And I think even though we've got strong supporters and strong detractors, it's going to float all boats. Another thing, as a combat veteran, this is incredibly important to me, that he cares about the security of this nation. And he's not worried to stand up and fight and take a stand for this nation and to stand up for our veterans. That's something that's very, very important to me. And I think that is going to continue. So if you look at his America First agenda, I really believe that is what he is going to do. Put America first, allow us to thrive as he gets the government farther and farther out of our lives, because he's attacking this as a business problem, not as an entrenched establishment career politician. I'm tired of this. People ask me why I'm running. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of sending establishment politicians to D.C. And I like having somebody that's a businessman that loves this nation and will stand up to our enemies and protect our allies. I think that he's going to be an asset.
So when I'm your United States Senator, I'm going to make one solemn pledge. Every decision I make, I'm going to ask, does this add to jobs for Montanans, or does this subtract from jobs? Is this good for Montanans, or is it bad for Montanans? My goal is to go back there and represent Montanans. Now listen, I like a lot of things President Trump has done. His nomination of Judge Gorsuch to the Montana Supreme Court was outstanding. Probably one of the very best things that he has done, because Judge Gorsuch is going to be on the Supreme Court for the next 30 to 35 years. He's a fellow Westerner. He's a limited government, let's follow the law type of guy, a constitutionalist. That's going to be great for our country. Many of the other judges that he's appointed are in the same category. I like the fact that regulations have been reduced. In fact, I know that the Federal Registry has gone from 95,000 pages to 65,000 pages in the last year. That is tremendous. I like the tax reform package. That helps 90% of Montanans, and that is also going to grow the economy. I like the direction he's taking us on an international front of putting America's interests first. I like the fact that he's making NATO countries step up to the plate and pay their fair share for national defense of the NATO countries. He's done a lot of good things. I don't support everything he's done because it doesn't all support Montanans. On the tariffs, I believe he's negotiating and he's using that for a negotiating tool. But if he carries through and we end up in a trade war, that is going to hurt the heartbeat of Montana, which is agricultural products. 80% of Montana agricultural products are exported, 50% out of the country. If we get into a trade war, that is going to hurt our bread and butter, which is agriculture in Montana. So I'm going to go back and support those things that I believe in that will help Montanans, and I believe that's most of his agenda. But I'm not going to support everything if it doesn't help Montana. So jobs first, Montana always.
So the answer for me is he's an asset. Now it's true, I'm not very happy with him for signing the omnibus bill that occurred last week. But you know what, I'm gonna place that blame with the Senate leadership, with Mitch McConnell, that gave him that sewer sludge that he had to sign, whether, and then they left town, right? But here's the fact, as your candidate for the Republican Party going up against John Tester and the National Democratic Party, what we're going to do is we're going to run on the things that John Tester didn't vote for or what he supported underneath Barack Obama. You know, we have become a society or government where we have regulation without representation. And so what has happened since Trump has been in office? WOTUS. We talked about WOTUS. That's gone. All right. That was going to be a property right taking by the federal government. It's gone. How about the Clean Power Act? It's gone. And you know what? Our coal industry has a chance to come off the ventilator and maybe rehabilitate into being a thriving industry that'll take care of our schools and our infrastructure. What else? Do you remember what crosses party lines? How about the overtime rule? Do you remember if you're small businessmen or women that you were going to get killed by the overtime rule? We're going to bring that up. And you know what? Half the time through this summer we're going to talk about is the Trump tax cuts and why John Tester did not vote for them, because it helped Democratic farmers and ranchers as much as it did Republican. And the Green Party ranchers, hey, they got a great tax cut too. And if you were a farmer, rancher, or had a business, now the death tax was not going to take it from your family. You can pass it on. In Montana, that's huge. And John failed us. And that's, therefore, he's an asset. Trump is an asset. There we go.
Thanks for clarifying.
I want to thank all the candidates for being very prompt and very concise with their answers. We are at the last question of the established questions, and then we will have audience questions. Final question is, as our United States Senator, how would you deal with the problem of illegal immigration in our country from both borders? And do you support the building of the wall along the southern border?
All right.
Thank you. Again, as a combat veteran, one of my big issues is national security. My campaign is really about the American dream and about protecting that American dream. And where that comes into play, it's about having opportunities for our kids. It's about not having the government deep in our lives, and it's about protecting this great nation. And so one of the problems that we have right now is we have people crossing our borders, and we need to stop that leaking. We need to stop the illegal passage of people, because if we continue to just allow unfettered access of illegal immigrants, it's going to change everything. We do not have the infrastructure, the ability to deal with that. It's going to cause tremendous problems long term. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is the people coming across. And that's not the whole problem. I like to put this into terms on how it affects Montana the most. And how having leaks in our borders affect Montanans the most is not illegal aliens coming here. It's Mexican meth. Mexican meth is coming across that border and it's devastating our communities here. And if you don't think it's affecting you, it may not be affecting you or your family directly, but it is affecting you because it's creating huge problems for our law enforcement. I've talked to law enforcement all over the state and I ask them, what are their biggest problems? Not enough boots on the ground and fighting meth-related crime. It's a huge problem. We need to secure our borders. We need to know who's crossing and we need to know why. You know, another thing that I think is amazing that we even talk about is the whole topic of sanctuary cities. I can't believe that we're talking about that. If you come into my country illegally, you break the law, I'm sorry, you're going home. Don't pass go, don't collect $200, you're going home. I can't believe that that is something that we're talking about right now. Secure our borders.
The basis of a successful immigration policy has got to be secure borders. We have to know who is coming into our country, when they come into our country, and those people have to be vetted. I like the president's merit-based immigration system. So let's drill down a little bit. The big issue today is the Dreamers. I think we can take a common sense approach to this. We're not going to send them all home. That's not reasonable and it's not compassionate. We're not going to grant them all amnesty. That's not appropriate either. So let's run them through a merit-based immigration system, and if they pass muster, if they have a job, if they're producing members of society, if they're paying taxes, if they've learned English, then by all means, let's give them a path to citizenship. They don't get ahead of anybody, but they can go through that same path that all of our ancestors did when we came into this country. On the other hand, if they've broken the law, if they don't have a job, if they're not producing, then by all means, we're going to send those people home. They do not deserve to be here. To me, that's the American system, and it works, and we can do that. There's a balanced approach that we can be compassionate and hold people accountable. It's based on vetting appropriately. It's based on merit. We are the melting pot. We are the greatest country in the world because of the melting pot that has brought that greatness to this country. We need to continue it, but within parameters of only having merit-based people that are going to contribute to the society. Thank you.
It's very simple where I stand. I want a high wall and I want a wide gate. I mean, the gate or a wall, our borders right now are so porous that the price of drugs are very cheap, and it fuels our epidemic of addiction. A higher wall, a solid wall, one that not only provides national security, but also prevents trafficking of drugs and people across the border, will be very effective and will be helpful to our state and to our society. But we also need a white gate. We need to fix our immigration system. I'm the grandson and great-grandson of immigrants who came here from Europe. And I agree, we are a melting pot. And I'm very proud of the fact of my heritage, and I'm proud to see other people like Nikki Haley, who their parents came from India, and isn't she a rock star for the UN as our ambassador? We need that kind of spunk. We need that energy. And you know what? It comes from mixing ourselves with our immigrants and developing such a great society. So yes, high wall, wide gate.
The federal government's powers are supposed to be few and limited. But one of the most important things that the federal government is charged with is protecting our citizens and our interests here and abroad. And they have failed miserably by allowing people to come in and out of our country, and they don't know who they are, where they are, or how long they are going to be here. Number one, we absolutely have to build a wall. We do. It's been proven in areas around the globe that it works. If you look at Israel, they built a wall to protect their nation, and they reduced the tax by 75%. We went down in Yuma, Arizona, we built a section of wall that reduced illegal crossings by 90%. What separates us from the rest of the world is our Constitution and that we are a nation of laws. We have to protect our border, and then we have to enforce the laws that are in place now. If we don't like the laws that are in place right now, there is a process with which we can change them. In this country, we don't just ignore laws. We don't just ignore laws. Everybody has to honor them, and you're supposed to have equal justice under the law. And that is not taking place right now. So let's secure our border and then go about the process of having people uphold the laws that are in place in this nation.
So it looks like we're currently having the rest of the audience questions delivered.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let me say something first. So many really great questions. It's encouraging to know that we have so many voters that want to be informed and care so much about this democracy. So thank you for that. We won't get all of them in, unless you want to stay till 9 o'clock. But
sure.
We will do what we can.
You buying dinner?
We'll ask you what you think, okay? Thank you so much for this.
All right. Yeah, we had a couple early on, in case we needed a bridge from that point until this, but I really like this first question. So we'll start with this, and the first person answering will be Russ.
What is how much time?
Oh, sorry, I apologize. Each of the candidates will have 1 minute to answer each audience question, and that way I figure we'll be able to get through as many as possible. So starting out, what is John Tester's greatest weakness as a candidate running for re-election in the Senate?
John Tester's greatest weakness is his voting record. Time and time again, he has voted against Montanans' interests. Voted to protect sanctuary cities. Voted against the tax reform package. Voted against Judge Gorsuch. Decided to vote for the Affordable Care Act. Voted for gun control and voted for justices that are anti-Second Amendment. In fact, big picture, John Tester on all bills of controversy in 2017 voted with Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist, 85% of the time. Just to compare that, our beloved Senator Daines voted with Bernie Sanders 3% of the time. John Tester is out of touch with Montana. He's getting most of his money from the East Coast and the West Coast liberals. He's out of touch because he wants to continue to go to that faucet of money, but it makes him very vulnerable because he is out of touch with mainstream Montana.
It is John Tester's voting record. You know, it is something that we just have to be able to carry him kicking and screaming to his voting record and hold him accountable. Because he's going to want to run this re-election on anything else but this. You know, the only time he seems to vote in step with Montanans is when he's up for re-election. Thank you.
I'll take that one step further. It's his dishonesty about his voting record, folks. He comes back here and tries to act like he's a good old boy from Big Sandy and votes to represent each and every one of us, and he doesn't. The record speaks for itself. Everybody is going to be able to outline that. But the worst part about it is he's dishonest about that record because he comes back and still tries to say that he represents us and doesn't. I will stand on my record.
Well, I've actually got this in three parts. First of all, like everybody up here said, is he has made it really clear that he is a rubber stamp for his party and does not care about the people of Montana. And that is one of his biggest problems. The other problem is he's not a businessman. He doesn't understand legislation that he's acting on. Like Dodd-Frank, he flip-flopped on that because he's not a businessman, doesn't understand it. And finally, the biggest thing is he pretends to be an advocate for the veteran. And I am a veteran. I'm connected with the veterans in this state. And when he's campaigning on that, saying what he's doing for veterans across the state, and I see veterans suffering here, that is something we can attack him with and send him home with. I think those are his three big vulnerabilities.
All right, and then next up we have, would you have voted for or against the recent omnibus spending bill passed into law, and why?
No, I would not have. I mean, it's true, our military has suffered, and it's been starved and held ransom for the last 10 years. In fact, We are in a worse shape, I believe, than when I became a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force in 1984. I mean, Ronald Reagan built up our military, and what did we do with it? The Soviet Union collapsed. What we're seeing here is we're going to be dealing with threats with China, North Korea, we're dealing with Russia, and really we're having a hard time to be able to respond. But the fact still remains is the price tag to ransom our military was too high in this omnibus bill. He should have worked harder for us on this one. Thank you.
No, I would not, and I think the omnibus bill is a perfect example, classic Washington, D.C. legislation. They couldn't get it through with a couple of projects, so they started adding another one, and another one, and another one. And it grew from $800 billion to $900 billion in value. And then it was $1 trillion. Then it was $1.3 trillion. And that's because they continued to buy votes. That's all that is from, buying votes. And that's why I'm a strong, strong advocate of having single title legislation so that everything can be voted up or down on its own merits, and you're not able to go in there and attach different ornaments to the Christmas tree until you continue to buy enough votes to pass it. Thank you.
Again, you know, I approach this as a businessman, and I've had to deal with a lot of big contracts in my business, purchase and sale agreements and loan documents and partnership agreements. You put 2,200 pages on my desk, that's a problem with career entrenched politicians that don't know how to run a business. You signing a 2,200 page document overnight, ridiculous. The other part of that is it's a tremendous problem, like I was talking, adding to that $20 trillion. We need to stop the bleeding. We need to just stop that. So looking at those two problems, and I hear that the president, you know, signed it because he needed to get money to the military. He needed to make sure that he got that funding. And as a combat veteran, that's important to me, but that giant behemoth of a spending bill should not have passed, and I would not have voted for it.
Well, this one's an easy one. I'll make it 4-for-4. I would have voted against the omnibus bill as well. Let me say again what Alex de Tocqueville said. In democracy in America, every democracy eventually goes broke because people take money out of the public treasury to continue to get reelected. And that is precisely what that omnibus bill is. Listen, I'm running because we are blessed to have twins, Harrison and Barkley, who are 20 years old. It is unconscionable the debt that we are passing along to them. 2018, we have a good economy, we have the lowest unemployment we've had in 17 years. This is the time that we should have balanced budgets or surplus budgets, and yet we're going to have an $800 billion plus debt this year. It's wrong, it's not sustainable, and it has to stop.
So our next question is to each of you. If you are not successful, will you commit to support the nominee full throttle and aid in fundraising? And we'll be starting with that.
Yep. Yes, very simple. I believe in the Republican Party. I have supported the Republican Party since 1980, and I will continue to do so and have done so in the past. Thank you.
Together we succeed. Divided we fail. And our biggest threat right now is John Tester. We need to get rid of him. And whatever happens in this primary, we need to rally behind our candidate and give him all the support we can to send John Tester back to music class.
I do agree to support any of the my opponents that get through the primary. The goal is to defeat Senator Tester. As I started this presentation, I believe I am the best candidate to defeat Senator Tester. Why do I say that? Montana roots, fourth generation Montana, my judicial and legislative background, and last my endorsements. People support me that you know and respect. Governor Mark Brasco, the late Governor Judy Marks, Governor Stan Stevens, Congressman Rick Hill, Congressman Denny Reberg, Phyllis Burns, over 100 Republican officials statewide, including over 70 that have served in the Montana legislature. As Mark Roscoe told me, he said, you know, Russ, I was the RNC chair. I typically don't support in a primary. I'm going to support you because you would make an excellent senator, and you're the only one who can defeat Senator Tester.
Yeah, there we go. The answer is yes. Again, I've been on the campaign trail now for almost a year, and I can tell you that these gentlemen, including Ron Murray, who dropped out of the race, are honorable gentlemen, and they are passionate for the Republican cause. There are some differences between us, and you see them. But again, we just got to remember, what are we fighting for? And we need to be one team with one mission, with one goal, and that is to return the state of Montana to having two Republican U.S. senators, just like we did almost 100 years ago. Thank you.
For our next question, out of the 100 sitting senators, who do you most admire? And that'll be starting with Troy.
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I think that Senator Daines has done a great thing for Montana. I think that coming from a business background and having success there, that I've been supportive of him. And again, you know, looking at my background and coming from, you know, a business background and a non-political background, I just have to say that we need to support all of ours, and we especially need to support those that are supporting this and representing this great state. And I just want to talk a little bit about representing this great state, because I know there's a lot of talk about getting establishment politician endorsements, and you know, I personally don't vote on endorsements, but what I have done as I've gone down this path is I've gotten Montanans, taxidermists, home builders, veterans, people that are hardworking Montanans to represent me. I'm not part of the establishment. I'm going to represent you, the hardworking citizens of Montana. Thank you.
So I like Senator Thune from South Dakota. I like Senator Cornyn from Texas. I like Senator Rubio from Florida. But the one person that I really know and respect, and the one person I would really look up to, is Senator Daines. I know him. He's had dinner at our table in our home. He's a man of faith. He's a man of integrity. He's a man of character. He believes in the values that I do of Montana first. He voted against that omnibus bill. I think Senator Daines is a shining example, and we are so darn lucky to have him as our senior in Montana. Let's make him our senior senator for Montana.
Well, I can tell you, it's not Mitch McConnell. That man needs to be repealed and replaced, all right? That's where we gotta go. I'll tell you, I'm very proud of Senator Rand Paul. He's a surgeon, and you know what? He calls it as he sees it, even when it's unpopular. He's gonna tell you where he stands and why he stands there. You know what? That's why I like Rand Paul. He's true to himself.
Senator Daines is a fine man, and we have worked together extremely well over the last several years, trying to resolve many of these healthcare issues that you all are dealing with right now. I spent a lot of time in Washington trying to get them to understand that the way we are going to resolve the healthcare issue is not to make sure that everyone has access to insurance, but to make sure everyone has access to good healthcare. And I did work with him and spent time and shared that information. But I also, while I was there, had a lot of other people that I met with to make sure that they understood that we had to turn this control over to the state. Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, some of the most prominent, solid conservatives that are in the nation right now. Our new National Security Advisor, John Bolton, they all have endorsed me because they know that I'll stand up there and stand for you and stand beside them. Thank you.
Will you work, once elected, to get rid of the Johnson Amendment that forbids political talks or endorsing of candidates by nonprofits such as churches or the American Legion? And we will be starting with Russ.
To be completely honest, I don't know enough about that to be able to say whether I've worked to repeal it or not, and that's on me. I'm a quick study, but as a judge for 22 years, I need to look hard at the arguments in favor of it, and I need to look hard at the arguments in opposed to it. And I have not done that. So you kind of caught me flat-footed, Whoever asks that question, if you give me your telephone number afterwards, I will promise to get back to you within 24 hours with an answer. I'm sorry I don't have an answer today, but frankly, I don't know the pros and cons, and that's on me. But I will get back to that person who asked the question. Thank you.
The answer is yes, and here's why. It's because it's been used and it's been weaponized and politicized and used more against the right, more against conservative principles. You know what? If it's not going to be applied fairly, it should be removed and not be applied at all.
I think it goes directly to the heart of one of the things that I was talking about earlier, and that is the different ways that the tax code is used to distort what we are trying to do. So the reason the Johnson Amendment is there, it's worked against school choice, and it's also worked against religious organizations that wanted to go out and support individuals, and that's the problem. But they're using the tax code as a tool to suppress freedom of speech and the ability for people to educate their children the way that they choose. So I would work to eliminate that as well. Thank you.
Well, to give a definitive answer like Russ, I'm going to say I don't know enough to say yes or no, but I'm going to say what concerns me. I'm not a politician, I'm just a businessman, so I'm going to say what concerns me. The Constitution is very important to me, and the concept of free speech. And just because you are a not-for-profit, I still think you should have a voice and you should be able to exercise that, and I think that that should not be stifled. That's my basic feeling, that we should all be able to exercise our free speech, whether we're for profit or not, or whatever, you know, or the 501c3. But I do not know enough about the actual bill to say yes or no, because I'm sure there's other things in there. I'm not a politician. I'm just a problem solver. But I do not support anything that limits our ability to speak our minds, whether you're a church, a nonprofit, a community, whatever it is. And that's my position on that.
So, we're going to go ahead and we're going to allow each of the candidates to do a 1 minute close.
I got you on that.
I want more questions.
Tell you what, talk them into staying for another hour. We got enough. So we'll allow each of the candidates to do a 1 minute close, and then we'll have a quick wrap up, and we'll call it a night. Sir?
Well, for fairness, do you want to go the other way since I started, or what would you like to do?
That makes sense to me.
Russ, would you like to go first or last? Your choice.
That'd be fine.
All right.
So as you see, we have four strong candidates up here. They're all good folks. The question is, who can defeat Senator Tester? The fact that I'm a fourth generation Montanan is no credit to me, and I appreciate everybody who has moved to Montana because we love this state. But it takes away the argument that a couple of my opponents have, that they've been here a short term, and it's going to be hammered on by the Democrats. The Montana endorsements that I have that I've talked about, I think that shows something. The Montana contributions that I have, I've had over or approximately 1,000 Montanans reach into their pocket and contribute. In fact, with the last reporting, I raised 80% of my funds from Montanans. I believe I raised more money from Montanans than all three of my opponents combined from Montana. I think that shows the Montana support. I think those are the reasons that I am the guy that can defeat Senator Tester. The Montana roots, the Montana endorsements, the Montana support. I would very much like to have your support. We've got envelopes here, we've got signs here. If you want to grab a sign, I'd be honored if you would do that. Again, thank you for all attending, and God bless each and every one of you and your families.
You know, obviously there's a lot of similarities, and there's some things that really are stark contrasts here. And as I said earlier, what I liked about President Trump and what I think a lot of people liked about him is that he had success in the private sector. He was a businessman who knew how to solve problems outside of politics. He's not part of the establishment. He is somebody who has had tremendous success having not been in politics at all. I think that resonated with a lot of people, and we're all reaping the benefits of this. So which one of us can send John Tester home? Somebody who has built businesses in multiple industries, has done international trade, who has actually had success and built the American dream, and is a combat veteran who stepped up to the plate and served in Afghanistan when this country was under attack. John Tester has never created a job, never run a business, and he's never been to war. Send a warrior to beat John Tester.
Thank you all so much for coming out tonight. Again, you know who I am. I've served you. I've kept my promises. I've reduced spending. I reduced regulation. If you send me to Washington, D.C., no more will we be making good deals with bad countries. No more will we have a senator who takes and votes against tax cuts for you while he just took a tax, income raise in the omnibus bill. No more will you have a senator who puts the interest of illegal immigrants before the interest of Montana children and our nation's military. And no more will there be Obamacare for us, special care for him, and no care for our veterans. Send me there and I will take the fight for you. Thank you.
You know, as I said in the very beginning, you know, I'm just a boy born and raised in Great Falls, Montana, and one of the most important lessons I learned is that you dance with the one who brought you. So you've got four suitors in front of you here, and you got to decide who you want to dance with. All right? So here's the deal. Yeah, wait your turn. There we go. So the qualities I bring is that I'm the one that can take John Tester and make him accountable for his votes. I'm the one who can bring the message and be true to it. I'm a physician. I can talk about the issues of healthcare. As a veteran, I can continue to talk about healthcare and why our vets are not completely taken care of. I'm a small businessman with 85 employees, so I can talk to you about regulation and what it does to make it hard for me to hire more employees. And I'm a battle-tested state legislator who's not afraid to stand up and take the hit from all of the people like Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and ACLU. Thank you for your support.
First and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, how about one more round of applause for our candidates?